We read our interludes last week. When I saw the page that says day five on it, and I turned the page over to the very first chapter of day five, which is chapter 55, I saw something that immediately grabbed my eye. And if you're listening to the audiobook, you would not see this. This is why I wanted to talk with you guys about it, because I am pretty certain you guys would not have noticed this. One of the things I really loved about Tress, actually, I'm not going to spoil it, but there were elements of the book design of Tress that tied into the story. And I'm not just talking about the art. Art is one thing where you're kind of depicting what's there were elements of how the chapter headings look that tie into the story. And there, I had not really seen that outside of Tress. It has made its way to Wind and Truth, and it's been there the whole time, and I haven't noticed it.
Welcome back to Following Know It on Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 245, and we are in chapters 55, 56, and 57. I'm cutting straight to the chase because I can't stand it any longer. Elliot, you put in the outline and in our Patreon live reactions that you have a massive something to talk about. I don't care about chapter summaries. I don't care about two words. Paul, do we have a patron?
No, you can go ahead and go to your
point. Okay, great. Okay, so Elliot, what is your massive reveal? I can't take it any longer.
So I did tease you guys a little bit and posted in our Discord in one of our patron channels about this, but then told you guys you were not allowed to click on this because I did want your reactions to this live because I think this is fascinating. It may not even be anything. I may have been hyping all this up for nothing. You guys are just going to roll your eyes. But for me, this is kind of big. And what I'm talking about is when I turned the page over, we read our interludes last week. When I saw the page that says day five on it, and I turned the page over to the very first chapter of day five, which is chapter 55, I saw something that immediately grabbed my eye. And if you're listening to the audiobook, you would not see this. This is why I wanted to talk with you guys about it, because I am pretty certain you guys would not have noticed this. To string out this, nope, don't do it yet, Trevor. Don't do it yet. I'm going to show you. You can resist.
For you audio listeners, I was grabbing my book, but nope, I will resist.
Wait for me to show you. There, to string this out a little bit further, one of the things I really loved about Tress, actually, I'm not going to spoil it, but there were elements of the book design of Tress that tied into the story. And I'm not just talking about the art. Art is one thing where you're kind of depicting what's seen. There were elements of how the chapter headings look that tie into the story. And there, I had not really seen that outside of Tress. It has made its way to Wind and Truth, and it's been there the whole time, and I haven't noticed it. Let me show you. I'm finally going to show you what's happening here, Trevor. You're going to explode.
No, here's when Trevor does not have the patience for this. No.
Here it comes. No.
Pull up the
Discord.
Hold on. Oh, okay.
Before the reveal, I'll save this for Paul. I think I've actually been spoiled on this. After all of this, and you've built this up, I actually already know this. Go ahead.
I'm oblivious, so I'll get to enjoy this.
I'm going
to
be a little sad if you've been spoiled on this because it was a little bit of a moment for me. And it's actually not a big deal, but it's got my head spinning. So here, when I turned over the page, here is what I saw. Pushing this in the Discord for you guys now. This is what I saw. This is actually chapter 56, but it's the same thing. Now it's thinking. There you go. Hopefully that comes through for you here in a second. This is what I saw. So you get this chapter arch, right? This has been the whole time. And I flipped over the page and I went, hang on a second. Why is there bits of rubble here from our stone arch? Has that been there the whole time? So I flipped back a few pages back into day four. And here is what I saw in day four. Same stone arch that we've seen this whole time, slightly less deteriorated. Keep flipping back in the book. go back to day two, and this is what you find in the header chapters. No rubble this time, but still cracks. You've got a stone arch with these names, but there's cracks running through the whole thing. Go back all the way to day one, and you get what I had assumed this was the whole time because I hadn't noticed these changes, a completely whole stone arch with no cracks, no rubble, no nothing. So as the days are progressing, the header arches are crumbling. They're falling down. And I'm very furious at myself that I haven't noticed this until day five.
I unfortunately was spoiled on this.
Oh, no, Trevor.
Okay, I'm not disappointed because it is a cool detail, but someone at Dragonsteel told me about this, that they'd already seen this in the book. And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool, but I didn't think it was like going to be this huge thing moving forward. So that is a surprise to me that it's like continuing.
And here's why this is such a big deal. Because yes, some of you guys out there, maybe Paul's doing this now, I don't know, are just going to roll your eyes and go, oh yeah, art detail, yada yada. We're only at day five. Where are we headed with this? What does this mean for the story? Why is the arch crumbling? Why is the world crumbling around us? What is day 10 going to be? Is it going to be these header arches are completely piles of rubble? What does that mean for our story?
That's a great question. And for the record, I do think this is awesome. And it really makes me want to look at just the time, just like the,
right?
The banner thing on like a day 10, day 9, you know, chapter to see what the archway looks like. I'm into this. I love these types of details. I promise I was not rolling my eyes.
I am curious if like by the end of the book, it just like has a page split and there's no chapter title anymore.
Yeah.
If you just lose the chapters by the end of the book and you're just going.
And here's the other thing too. I think I talked about this when we first started this book because I was very excited. We had just gotten back from Dragonsteel 2024. We'd picked up the physical copy. I was able to get quite a few signatures in my book. Of course, it comes with Brandon's signature from when we pre-ordered it. But I got a bunch of the artists to sign it. And one of the artists that I got to sign, I believe her name is Haley Lazo. I'm sorry, Haley, if I'm mispronouncing your last name. And I asked her to sign my book, because I saw her credited in the beginning. And I just asked her, I was like, did you do art in the book? And she kind of looks at me funny and she goes, well, yes. And then I said, okay, well, can you sign it? And she's like, well, it's at the very end and it's pretty spoilery. So I said, okay, how about you sign it while I don't look? And she went to like the very back of the book and she signed something towards the back of my book. And I don't know why, but as soon as I saw this, I remembered that. What if this is building to something in the book design that we're going to hit at some point? And like you were kind of hinting at the Trevor, something changes in like the format and structure of the chapters and books we're reading.
Man, I've never been more tempted to scroll down to the bottom of my audiobook. You have to be really careful about your audiobook because you're like literally just one thumb tap away from like getting to the bottom of your chapter names. You're like, oh, so. You have to be very careful with an audiobook, but I've actually never been more tempted to than now to see if there's actually like chapter titles at all at the end of the book.
It is tough, Trevor, because anytime you open to go like, you know, I want to go back to this chapter, you're opening basically the whole like index glossary list of all the chapter titles like right there. And it's so, you'd be very cautious, very guarded. But this is cool, Elliot. I hope you keep us updated. Us audiobook listeners updated as we get further into day 6, day 7, and onward. We'll see. Maybe we won't have an arch by the end.
I'm guessing we won't.
So, all right.
It's quickly losing its structural integrity, right?
That's true. It could just collapse by day 8.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've read the book, comment when you noticed it. because it took Elliot till day 5. So I'm curious if people noticed it like on day 3 or if it took a while for people to notice.
Yeah.
And be careful how you comment because we don't know what's ahead.
Right. Yes.
At what point did you notice these something happening?
The headers were changing. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go, Trevor. That's what I've been taunting you for the last 24 hours with. It is nothing more than the stone arches on the front of each chapter are crumbling.
Okay. So I am a little disappointed that I already knew about this, but
it's your own fault.
It's not actually my own fault. But I am.
That's what Moash would say.
Still curious. You're right. That is what Moash would say. I am still curious if this actually goes somewhere, like you're saying, Elliot, or if it's just a cool little detail.
It could just be a fun art quirk. Right. Maybe. It's not. It's absolutely not. There's no way.
Isaac Stewart, what have you been up to? Okay. Now we can get into chapters 55, 56, and 57. Elliot, do you have a brief summary? I'm actually going to pull up the epigraphs. I didn't prep these, so go ahead and take your time with your brief summary. I'm going to prep some epigraphs.
You can do that, and we'll share our words while Trevor figures his life out.
Yes. While he does that, let me summarize 3 chapters that we're covering today, chapter 55, 56, and 57. In chapter 55, after I got past the crumbling arch that took me a couple of minutes of research to figure out what was happening there, we then got into Venli having some chats with the rocks around her and talking about the past, and there's domesticated chasm fiends wandering around the Yeah, not quite, right? Because your bingo board says riding chasm.
It does say riding, yes. But Venli specifically says people crawling all over. It's just a matter of time.
It is. So they're having a good time with the chasm fiends. Venli's still a little bit worried, though. What have I done? Have I drawn destruction on my people? She mentions there's a bunch of will shapers now. Apparently the Spren are a little more inclined to bond with the listeners now. Moving on from that, we go back to Dalinar, who is with Navani trying to find the next scene in the spiritual realm that they're trying to get to. And they're swimming around, but they do eventually manage to anchor themselves into a scene with 7 heralds chatting about what do we do next? And they have a little bit of a negotiation with the king of the singers, and Gavinor finally shows up. Dalinar manages to pull him into the scene with where they're at. So Gavinor is finally back with the crew everyone's counted for. And then chapter 56 jumps over to Sigzil on the Shattered Plains as he is fighting against the fused army. They're fighting against the Heavenly Ones. They're having a hard time because the Heavenly Ones aren't holding back anymore. They're going full all at it. Jumps back to Venli, who is now chatting with Leshwe. Leshwe's there. Leshwe's really sad because she's lost all of her powers and she now has to walk around the ground. What a bore. No more flying. Chapter 57, to round up this episode, is another flashback chapter with Zeth. We've had a time skip. So 3-year time skip in the past with Zeth. He's a little bit more grown up. He's got to be like, what, 14, 15, I think, now at this point. And he's just doing awesome at being a soldier. He's beating all the other kids around him. He's beating his sergeant when his sergeant goes up against him, and he's still asking all the questions, and he's able to ask some of his questions to some of the honor bearers that visit the city and get some rather bleak answers back. Actually, in my opinion, I was pretty dissatisfied with the answers that he got from the honor bearers that he talks to, but we'll get into all of that here in episode 245.
Okay, Paul, give me your 2 words. I need you to buy me more time.
All right, I will talk at a lovely brisk pace. I'm kidding. My 2 words this week are chasm friends, to just throw a nod out there at Trevor's statement earlier, and also a nod to if he saw the dragon steel and now like produced short stories that Brandon did, what was the title of it? Story Deck. One of them one of which was titled Chasm Friends. That was the one that was not canonical, technically, but it's kind of fun here. We see mentions to the Chasm Fiends and stuff like that. So, Chasm Friends and Defiant. And I chose Defiant as a word to describe, loosely describe Zeth in his flashback chapter. It's not so much that he's trying to be defiant, I feel, but he's trying to understand, trying to learn what is right and how to do what is right. And I feel like that naturally comes as a defiant stance to the situation that he's in. And so, yeah, Defiant and Chasm Friends.
Wonderful. Elliot?
My two words are peace and war. And I picked the two of them because it comes up a couple of times, mainly with the heralds. They're trying to decide between
not war peace and peace war. By Leo Tolstoy.
No, no. Not war and peace. Peace thing. And war.
Okay.
By peace and war.
Okay.
Tolstoy, Leo.
Okay. Gotcha.
There we go. Yeah.
And yes, the heralds are trying to decide between peace and war with the singers. And Venli's all worried about, have I brought war onto my peaceful people, the listeners, just by being here? And poor old Zeth in the past is trying to find a way to not be so violent. And every single thing he does, he's getting pushed towards being warlike and violent.
I see. Okay. Before we get into chapter 55 and the crumbling chapter header that it contains, epigraphs. We have two epigraphs, which I'm quite excited about. And here they are. Dearest Sephandrius, your rebuttal is eloquent as always, but did you think I would be moved? I have kept my part of the bargain and will not be budged. I have stayed upon my land, bringing blessings to the people of Nalthus, gifting them the power of gods, as I was so long denied. I do not repeat the mistakes of the past. Author is pretty clearly... anyone?
Endowment.
Ding, ding, ding. I mean, it's got to be endowment, right?
Surely.
Surely. My one caveat, and maybe Dragonsteel and or Tor or whoever makes this call has learned from Mistborn. Michael Kramer distinctly reads this in a male voice, which I keyed into, because that has been a very heavy spoiler in previous Cosmere books of reading Mistborn epigraphs in Sazed's voice. But we get this in a male voice, and endowment, I just copper-minded endowment. The vessel of endowment is held by Edgley. She is located on Nalthus and is the only shard present there. So I'm wondering if this is actually not endowment or if Dragonsteel has learned their lesson and is keeping unauthored epigraphs ambiguous on purpose.
Is it Hoid's voice?
No.
Is Hoid's voice distinct enough?
It's Michael Kramer's narrator voice.
Ah.
Yeah, Hoid's voice is definitely notable enough. It's not that.
No, Michael Kramer reads it as if it's text, not a quote.
Got it.
So I think they're deliberately not trying to voice whoever this is, but I'm fairly certain this is endowment. So yeah. We get a dearest Sephandrius. So, ooh.
It's just cordial.
She's my
rebuttal is eloquent.
No. That dearest is not cordial, Paul.
You should see my work emails. I'm kidding.
Yeah?
Very professional. Dearest Sephandrius. Anytime they use the name Sephandrius, I instantly like sit up straight. I'm listening fully. I don't know why. I just always think of Sephandrius, ever the rat. You ever know, like rat. It's just carries a weight to it with that name. Always gets me listening. So
Sanderson did hit a home run with Sephandrius. That's a good one.
That's true.
yeah, other than that, I don't think I got too much out of this besides we're going to get some endowment epigraphs, which I'm quite excited for.
Which is cool. I wish that I'm hoping that Brandon continues to do this, but maybe look at sell in some way so that I can mark some stuff off my bingo card.
Yeah, but Dominion and Devotion are dead. They can't write a letter.
Yes, I understand, Trevor. But like, I just need somebody there to please radio in to Sephandreas, dearest Sephandreas, and say hello from Cell and be like, "Oh, things are good here on Cell. Thank you so much for asking."
I was writing to
confirm Paul's bingo board. That's why.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
All right, fair enough.
My only question on these was, are we just continuing the collecting up responses to Hoyd's call for help? Is that all this is? Hoyd asked for help. This is endowment saying politely, nope, sorry, I'm staying here.
Yes. And we've had these letters before. I think Right. Even one from endowment. I think this is letter number two from endowment. So I wonder if we will learn something new, maybe about another shard in this letter. So that's what I'm looking out for. I doubt it will have direct ramifications for our story, because that's kind of how these letters go. Okay. Right off the bat, we get something I was not expecting in day five. We get Venli point of view. I don't know when I was expecting Venli, but it was not this early. And I guess we're not super early in the book. We're approaching halfway. But Venli is back in our story with Leshwi for chapter 55. And is she in 56 too? Yeah, 56. Leshwi, guys, we're checking back in with some of our forgotten characters who took center stage last book.
Center stage. Like, kind of middle of the stage roughly, but like
that would be the center.
Like, well, yeah, but like like a little off center, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was her book, like it's her show, but there were debates that it was not truly her book, you know.
Right. Oh, I was also referring to Moash though.
Yes, okay, that's fair. Yeah, I was really excited to see Venli come back into the fray. It's been a while. I've been very curious to see. I was honestly a little surprised to see that there are like other will shapers popping up. I kind of thought that was going to be the whole shtick, was that she was completely like isolated. I wasn't necessarily rooting for her to be isolated. That's unfortunate, but I feared that that would be the case. I'm curious to know what y'all think. How much Venli do y'all think we're going to see in this book? Like, how much of a role is she going to play? Because we are dealing with some pretty massive things. And I feel like Venli has to have some more major impact in some way to have a book for her. But I don't fully know what that might be. Or if that will happen.
We will get just enough Venli for her to save the Shattered Plains. And no more. I don't think Venli will come back to a center role.
Well, hold on though. Don't we need some kind of reform the Oath Pact, reassemble the Avengers, get all the orders back together? She's the only Will Shaper we've got. We're going to need her at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, we had that scene at the end of Oathbringer, and she was a part of it. She was the Will Shaper that was present when Dalinar was looking around. It's like, oh, there's 10 of us. That's crazy.
But part of where I feel like this needs to go at some point is, what did the Heralds do to create the Oath Pact? Can we recreate that to relock up all the crazy evil we've let out of the box? And to do that, we're going to need new heralds of all the orders, in theory. Could we see a twist where it goes a different direction? Definitely. Absolutely. But I feel like that's the most obvious direction for this to go, is we need a new Oath Pact, and Venli's going to have to come back to be the new Will Shaper Herald.
I don't sign on to the new Oath Pact thing. I doubt that's happening. So that's not on my that's not a duck I need to get in the row by the end of the book. Venli's not fair a enough. Duck.
So not an egg you need to crack?
Correct. Okay. Kaladin and Zeth are ducks that I need to get in my row, but Venli is not.
Okay.
I appreciate you, Venli. Don't worry.
It's not that I don't appreciate Venli. Venli is cool.
Well,
it's just I don't see her as pivotal to the end of this book.
Gotcha. So you don't dislike her, but she's just not important to you at all, right?
She doesn't get the inheritance. I'll just put it that way.
I see. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, now that we know that, I think we could just exclude Trevor from all future Venli conversations since he just can't stand her.
Does she get your inheritance, Paul? I know Zeth gets 100% and everybody else is a footnote, so...
That's not fully true. It's like 95%, Trevor. Come on, don't be ridiculous here.
Did you guys get anything from this Venli chapter? I got one key thing, and it's not important at all.
You would. Our common Venli hater.
No. It's good. It's cool. It's cool. Promise.
Okay. I trust
Venli's mom attunes the rhythm of hope. Did we know there was a rhythm of hope?
There's a rhythm of everything.
No, there's not, because they have to use some things to substitute for other things. And Venli's mom attunes the rhythm of hope, which is an original rhythm of Roshar. It's not a rhythm of honor. It's not a rhythm of odium. It's an old rhythm of Roshar. And I thought having the rhythm of hope as an original rhythm of Roshar is really cool. Maybe I'm fanboying too much about the word hope, but I'm a big fan of the word hope, and the fact that there's a rhythm of hope is cool.
Yeah, I'm all for that. And I think it is cool that we see that, because this book has really brought back to the forefront the concept of the original beings or original properties of Roshar.
Yeah.
These rhythms, the old gods, is that what they call them? The wind and the stone, and there's another one there.
The night,
yes. There's a big emphasis on this, and this has puzzled me a lot. Like, it's with everything going on, I've tried to figure out where is this gonna come into play. Is that something that's gonna be like restored? Like, okay, let's say Odium is defeated. Let's throw that out as a hypothetical. Are we gonna see these like original beings or properties of Roshar somewhat like restored by that? I'm at a loss. There's a ton of theories you could probably throw out. I don't know where they're going to come in, but they're here. They're there, and some people are stumbling upon them once again. And it's got my wheels turning, but turning as in like they're spinning in the mud and not going anywhere. So
I am curious, what's up with the night? Because in these chapters, people always mention the wind and the stones together as like the collective good. Or in a flashback, like, we worship the wind and the stones, and the night is always left out. Have you guys noticed this? Is the night like an evil old god, or is that how they perceived it at least?
I have noticed this. There was a mention at one point about the night. Oh, I can't recall it. I want to say it was something on the order of, and the knight who had kind of wandered off by now, yada, 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 or something to that effect. I don't remember exactly what it was, though. You're right, though. Lots of wind, lots of stone, not much knight.
Right. And they've all three been referenced scholastically of there are three, the wind, the stone, and the knight. But then when there's actually a character referencing them, like these stones, or the wind, or an old singer talking about the stones or the wind, they just don't talk about the night. And there was a line in this book, or in this chapter, that said, Venli was playing with the rocks, and the rocks didn't care about tomorrow, let the wind care about tomorrow. And I stopped, and I thought, okay, hold on. there was an absolutely applicable old god here to worry about tomorrow, and that would be the night. The night has to come for the tomorrow to happen, like quite literally. So if we are ever going to reference the night, it should have been then. Something is going on with the night or the night watcher. Are those two the same thing? We haven't really got the answer to that. Did cultivation like tame the night and create the night watcher? Like what is going on with the night? I don't have an answer, but there's a suspicious absence.
I'm still waiting for another capitalized entity to enter into that equation, but for now it's just wind and stone and night with, yes, night not showing up too much.
Okay. Dalinar gets on the subway from one vision to another and sees what we and him assume is himself, the champion of Nine Shadows, or the guy in the black shard plate. This is what Renarin has assumed is Dalinar, and Moash assumes that's Dalinar in the previous episode last week. So Dalinar sees guy in black shard plate leading armies on some weird planet that definitely is not Roshar. Where is it?
I chuckled a little bit when I read this, because Dalinar seeing, yeah, what he thinks is himself leading an army on a planet with a pale moon. And I kind of wanted to look out my window and go,
yeah.
We've got a pale moon. Earth incoming? Surely not, right? Earth is not part of the Cosmere as far as we know.
Earth is not part of the Cosmere. Earth is a part of Cytonic, though.
I don't know my Cosmereology as well as I should, though. Skadrial has no moons. There's some jokes there, right?
Correct. Because they don't get the pun of wax and wane.
Correct. Other planets do have moons. I don't remember, though.
Yeah. This could Tress be has like a ton of moons.
Tress has a ton of moons, yeah.
Yeah. Lumar has two planets, but that there's no moon.
Yeah.
Sorry, not Lumar. Komashi.
Yes.
Is that the name of the planet?
Komashi.
Yeah, that's the Yumi one. Yeah. Komashi.
I couldn't tell you there. I couldn't. Man, we talked
what
about
is, what is. I don't remember. Does what's it called?
Taldane.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I think.
Were you? That's White Sand.
No. I'm not thinking of Taldane. Does the Sunlit Man, blanking on that planet name? Does it have
a water Canticle?
Moon? Yeah. Canticle basically is a moon.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like a little.
Canticle's like an asteroid that's rotating a sun.
Yes.
Yeah.
So no, it doesn't.
I didn't think so.
Anyway, it could just be like, you know, Serenity or some other planet we've never seen. But yes, I didn't recognize it from a pale moon. So he sees himself, black shard plate, or what he assumes is himself. And then they jump into the Herald conversation. Who has we meet every living Herald? Because we need to talk about this.
Paul? I think it's not me.
And that I think is we me.
Just about check this off almost.
Okay.
Well, someone has dialogue from six Heralds, and we definitely check that off.
This does check mine. So I have dialogue from, I think it's dialogue from seven or six, more than six.
Six or more, yeah.
We're at like eight now, so okay. Yes.
That one's done.
Mine is we meet all the Heralds. All the living heralds. Was right. What we said because Yezrian was dead.
But we've already met Yezrian.
Yes, we have met Yezrian as well. But I think going into this, I think we were missing Videl and Pyla.
Pyla and Videv. So here's
and we meet we
see both of them in this chapter, right?
Here's the problem, though. Here's the problem. So we do. So all the heralds except for Nail are in this scene, but Dalinar and Navani take the place of Kalak and Pyla. So they turn to Navani and said, "Wait, say, what do you think, Pyla?" And she answers. So have we met Pyla or not?
I think we have to wait and see what happens, because our argument may become moot. But
sure.
I don't know if that counts.
I just thought that was really funny, because that is such a ridiculous situation to be in, of there was Pyla right there a second ago and now she's not there.
That is a fair point. And it's a tough one to answer, because I'm like, you know, yeah, she probably didn't give a very Pyla-esque response. You know, could you say that Navani got to know, you know, Navani kind of lived out Pyla, so she's really, you know, she's probably met Pyla.
No, we didn't know, right? But we didn't meet Pyla.
Okay.
That is even more comically close than Kaladin not entering Shadesmar from last episode.
It's like the what? So whenever they opened up the portal and you could see inside of Ashen, and Trevor was like, "Nope, we haven't visited it yet." You know, it was like,
"No, I gave that over there."
Yes, you did, but you had to be like, "Well, once they step towards it,
right,
and look through it." Then we have, and so it's like we have this circle of all the heralds, and we've had all the names on the page, but yeah, we have not had a conversation with Pelia yet.
Right.
So I feel like they've met the herald Pelia. However, we'll come back to it. Maybe I won't have to argue.
I'm sure you'll get this, and if not, you can make a case at the end. But yes. Pyla needs to be in the room and you can check it off.
I want to address something, though, that I think maybe you said, Trevor, or maybe I misheard you. Not all the heralds are here. We are missing several. Nail. We are also missing Tal and Bata or whatever her name is.
Okay. Right.
And I noted that down as potentially significant. I think we have seven heralds that have teamed up. At this point, they talk about Nail as an adversary.
Yes.
And then Taln and Batar are not even in the picture yet.
I also noticed this. I'm actually pretty fascinated by early Roshar politics here, because you're right. They note Nail down as not necessarily an adversary, but not one of them. Like they go out of the way to talk to about him as if he is not part of them. The Makabaki are not in the clique. And all of these heralds clearly are. So, I naturally compared that to our modern day heralds of, okay, who's not in the clique? Nail, Batar, and Taln. Like, Taln is kind of left out to dry in a couple hundred years or whatever it's going to be. And then Nail has always kind of been doing his own thing, and Batar, up until quite recently, we would have assumed just clumped her in with the rest of them, but she's kind of been doing her own thing as of a couple interludes ago.
I noticed, too, that Dalinar steps into the role of Kalak, and the Kalak that we know is very nervous, very high-strung, not very courageous. His defining characteristic is actually cowardice. This Kalak, all the rest of the heralds, including Yezrian, who I think is king, I think they refer to him as Your Majesty, Yezrian. All of them, including Yezrian, turn to Kalak to say, "What is your decision?"
Yeah, that's true.
Found that kind of interesting.
That is really fascinating. And I think that's neat. And okay, so this is kind of the thing that I have wanted to see, I feel like, since we set out in the Wave King, since the what was it, the prelude, not the prologue, the prelude, where you see Kalak in these slain thunderclasts and this like epic imagery of these heralds, and they're like borderline deific, right? Like immense power, honor, all the things. And then we actually meet these heralds, and you're right, Kalak is cowardly and kind of an embarrassment, you know, like not someone you want to, you know, you want to follow,
right? Worship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And here we see, I imagine we will continue to get depictions of some of our heralds as being excellent, like Yezrian also. Like Yezrian was the leader of the heralds, and they referred to him as Your Majesty, and he had to be quite noble at the time. But all that we've seen is a drunk in a back alley speaking absolute nonsense. That's it. Like that's the Yezrian content we have gotten, which is wild. And so now we're kind of getting glimpses into these pictures of like the honorable heralds as they were. And I love that. Like, I feel like I've waited so long. I just needed a glimpse. Like, I just needed to know they started well. And we kind of knew that, right? But it's nice to have that confirmed in a way. So it's really cool. It's also sad to see how far they've all fallen. You know, how far away from that servitude of honor that they had, how far away from that they are.
Yeah, I agree. I'm most curious to see. So Yezrian actually makes a line of, the circle calls him majesty, but some of the other people don't respect him. Like, he actually has a conversation with Elodie, the leader of the singers, or at least the guy that they're making peace with in this chapter, or war. And Elodie says, can you keep your humans contained to your side of the mountains? And Yezrian says, no, I doubt I can, because they don't respect me. Or there are is a vast majority of humans that don't respect me. So at this point, Yezrian may be, or may have used to be, king. And when they showed up on Rashar, most of the humans are like, look where you got us. And he's clearly not respected anymore. What'd you guys think of our new character, Elodie, the guy, the leader of the singers in ancient times? Name seemed to be short for something in my head. Or long for something.
I went the other day. I went long, yeah. I saw that name and I saw the character, and he's rather chummy with our heralds. He says things like, oh, it's been 20 years since I've seen you, but you haven't aged a day, you know, reunion kind of thing with him. So knows the heralds, is clearly going to be the head of opposing forces here pretty soon. And his name seems awfully similar to a fused that we know, who has said a few suspiciously chummy things about heralds, who goes by the name of El.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that part.
When he kills Yezrian, remember, he says things like, oh, I don't remember exactly what he says, but it's along the lines of, you should have done better, my old friend, or something to that effect.
Well, and then this scene, he talks to Yezrian and says, I hope we never meet again, because if we do, it'll be on the battlefield.
Yep.
Oh, man, I forgot about that scene.
So I guess this is a formal prediction from my court. Elodie is going to become El.
Wonder if he gets a title and then gets it stripped away from him, and then he swears off titles from then on or something like that. Interesting. I forgot about the old friend thing with Yezrian.
I did not put that together, but that would be, I think that would be fitting, and I absolutely believe that. I've been wrestling with where does El fit into this, because El keeps coming around every now and then, and I've never understood why or to what purpose. That is some purpose. That's some meaning that holds a lot of weight, I imagine, on a reread of this series, that I would look at El totally different.
The vision kind of ends, or is about to end, and then Dalinar just out of thin air grabs Gavinor out of the curtain and pulls him onto stage. And Dalinar's like, "Whoa, where'd you come from?" Gavinor's like, "I've got no idea where I came from, Grandpa." So, what? Why? Okay. I thought we were going to have to like pull Gavinor out of some trouble or something. Why is he here if he just wasn't there for the first vision and then just shows up for the second one and now he's with us? What? I thought we were going to have to go rescue him.
I'm stuck with the same question. Yeah. What purpose is Gavinor going to serve here other than just being a tag along to the party now, I guess?
My brain goes, okay, now he's going to witness something that is really key for Gavinor. Like, are we going to go to a Gavinor memory, or is Gavinor going to tag along with Dalinar, see something in the ancient past that Gavinor would care about? I have no idea what that would be. And that matters.
What about kind of the inverse of that? Does Gavinor have any memories that would provide critical information to Dalinar and Navani? Like, are they going to accidentally end up in a Gavinor memory and go, "Oh my gosh, we didn't think about this"?
The only thing I could think of is just some connection with the Unmade, but I don't think there's anything else. Like, other than that, and that's what, unfortunately, our fears came to light with Gavinor saying, like, he just kept seeing his mother.
Yeah,
and I was like, that one. Oh no. Like, our fears were realized in that moment that Gavinor did not fall into a happy memory, you know? So I'm hoping there's not further pain and aftermath from that for his sake. But yeah, I don't think there's anything too crazy that he would know.
Unless there's something with Moash?
There could be something further behind the scenes of that like event with Gavinor's mom.
Maybe
Acedon, is that right?
Maybe Acedon like inviting the Unmade in, and that's a important detail or something like that.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. If so, it would be pretty hidden. But I don't know. I don't think that's where it's headed. Just because I bank that off of not being able to pinpoint anything specific.
Yeah, I really don't know where.
Yeah,
Gavinor's presence is going. Okay, 56. Sigzil point of view, and back to Venli as well. We have the fight on the Shattered Plains has kicked off. Go ahead, Elliot.
Do you guys want a fun fact?
I do.
I discovered a fun fact by a complete accident, actually. Do you guys remember what the special name for the Heavenly Ones is in like their own language?
Shay Anim or something like that?
Yeah, I think the way, I have no idea how to actually pronounce this, but in my head, I want to say Shanaim.
Shanaim is how they say it in the, I know what you're about to say, but go ahead.
So here's my fun fact. Yeah, if you already know this will be sad. There's going to be two big things that I drop on you that you already know.
It's news for Paul.
I was sitting in church today. I was sitting in church this morning.
I know this.
And the pastor was talking about in Genesis, literally the beginning of Genesis, where God creates the heavens and the earth. And I noticed that the Hebrew word for heavens is shamayim. It's not quite identical, but it's pretty much the same. So it just caught me as kind of interesting that that name is clearly inspired by the Hebrew word for heavens.
Yes, I did know this. And the reason I knew this is because I did a preview podcast of this book with Ranks, who is Jewish. And so he told me all about all the different heavenly ones and the there's all different sorts of.
Well, there we go.
They all have Hebrew inspired names, even like the fused original names like Leshwi and Raboniel, like rabbi is from Rabon, like teacher. So the fused and the have Hebrew name inspirations. Yeah, there you go.
Fascinating.
Sigil fights them. And no longer the fancy duels with Leshwi back in Rhythm of War. We are fighting, fighting, fighting. Who has three named Windrunners die on their bingo board?
I do. I think it's more than three I have to hit. That's a lot.
More than three? Yeah. We have... I did specifically make the caveat named because I figured we'd get like, oh, 12 Windrunners died today. I figured we'd get that, and we absolutely got that. So... yes, we have to get more than three named Windrunners die for Elliot's. But if we're ever going to get it, it would be in these Sigil scenes. So we have that. Did you guys get anything from these Sigil chapters? I noticed one thing of the Everstorm has kind of came and sat on top of the Shattered Plains. And I thought to myself, yo, okay, if they kill... fused, aren't they just gonna like respawn? Haven't they moved their respawn point up to the checkpoint? That's cheating. Everyone knows that. But then I was like, as I was thinking about that, Michael Kramer said that in my ear like 30 seconds later. Sigil thinks that and says, oh, if the Everstorm's parked here, how long is it gonna take him to get reborn? Maybe a couple hours. And I was like, oh, Brandon Sanderson thought of that too. So I guess that's going to be a battle mechanic moving forward.
Yep. The only other thing I think I picked up from the Sigil section is that his weak point strategy that we talked about before, and I rambled for a little bit on engineering about why you might want to design intentional weak points into your design. It's appeared to be working. They're making them fight for ground that they don't care about. So that when they need to retreat, they can retreat and they don't have to worry about the land that they concede. So I guess it's working.
Yes. But I will say I don't have a very good mental picture of this battle yet, because I'm led to believe that it's 300 Knights Radiant against 1,000 Fused. As far as my brain goes, land in the tactical sense of a battlefield does not matter at all. Like these battles are so magic heavy that like losing ground doesn't even mean anything if Heavenly One's just like flying over your head and hitting the back line. Like, but none of losing ground didn't really have a big heavy connotation for me with this specific battlefield. Like it would have for Adolin, but with this one, it's like I just imagine mass chaos and magic and light and everywhere, and losing ground didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Trevor, that I didn't have the clearest picture with this, but not in a bad way, but there's a lot going on, and I'm slightly going to push back on your losing ground thing. I do agree that the literal ground does not really mean much because everybody's flying at this point, but there is, it doesn't say it, but I'm assuming that's similar to, I don't actually know. I guess this is a question instead. So where Adolin is, there's a lot of suppressive fire from archers. Like they make it mention all these, they have it specifically set up in their dome to have all these like rows of archers. And the suppressive fire can make a notable difference. Absolutely. I'm wondering if that's a similar dynamic here. It doesn't really mention that. So, but I'm like, I also think of any kind of militaristic army, and bows and arrows seem to be a common part of that, you know, like a staple. So my thought was, if they are losing ground, et cetera, or things aren't going their way, the other non-flying troops are definitely very affected by that.
Sure. If there was ever a defense of Hogwarts-esque battle on Roshar, it'd be this one, where there's people just flying this way and that, people are running back and forth, and there's mass chaos and nothing's organized. That's what I picture. Anything else? We get a Venli section of this chapter where they talk about their chasm friends. They go talk to Leshui. Leshui's upset that her fused powers have stopped working. I guess that's worth mentioning. That they said that that's not supposed to happen, even if they disaligned themselves with Odium. And it did. And Leshui, or Venli, takes it as a good sign of, it means that you really have severed your connection with Odium. Like, that's a good thing. This has never happened before, and you've always been under the influence of Odium, that means you're doing something right. That's how Venli's mom interprets it, at least.
Leshui's definitely taking it much harder than that, though. And I jokingly referred to this in my summary, but Leshui is not handling this well. It's alluded to when they're talking that Leshui has been floating for thousands of years and has not set foot on the ground unless absolutely forced to. And now she cannot fly and has to walk everywhere. And it's crushing to her. Someone who is used to the freedom of the skies is now chained to the earth, and she's not handling it well.
Yeah. Do you guys have any predictions on Leshui and Venli that aren't go save the Shattered Plains in a couple days? Because that's my bold prediction, but
yeah, I've been I mentioned earlier at the start of this episode of like, yeah, I'm wondering what Venli's bigger purpose is in the story. I feel like there's something that she's got to be in line for, but I don't know what. I think you're saving the Shattered Plains is a great theory, Trevor. I'm behind that. I've been wondering that with Leshui as well. I don't know, but there's got to be something. Leshui has been around in the background for a while, and I think there's got to be a greater thing. You know, like, we get this the crazy moments in Rhythm of War that Leshui is okay with Venli being in Night Radiance. Like, that shouldn't be the thing, right? That should not be a thing. And I think there's definitely got to be a lot greater of a purpose there. You know, you can't just drop that and then be like, yeah, that's all. She was just cool with it. And then you move on and forget about Leshui. You know, like, there's got to be something better here. I'm wondering, so we talked before about Shallan's story a little bit, and that it's all kind of ramping up towards Ba'ed Omishram being a piece of the puzzle. Do you think that they would have any further insight with that? Like, is there a chance that they somehow end up with the whole Ba'ed Omishram aspect? I don't really know what to call it. That missing piece of the puzzle, that they would know anything more about that. I don't know if that's relevant or not, but as far as ways that they could be more involved, that's the only other idea I have in my head.
I'd be quite surprised if they got entangled with the Ba'ed Omishram storyline at this point. They'd have to get to the spiritual realm and inform Shallan at some point, somehow, or maybe go talk to Relaine, which I guess would be a little bit more feasible.
Well, you're right. However, let's say the aftermath of that. Let's say hypothetically, sure, Ba'ed Omishram is freed, goes on a tirade or whatever, that something in the aftermath that they could affect. I'm not holding on to anything with that. I don't feel I have enough grounds to make any predictions, but that's the only idea that I have at this time that I think sounds feasible to me, sounds relevant. And frankly, I think that would be pretty cool, but I don't know.
All right, Zeth flashback. I enjoyed this Zeth flashback the most of any flashback we've gotten in this book. It took longer. It took its time. It painted the picture, painted each of the three scenes quite well. He takes down his staff sergeant in a fight. He goes and talks to his mom. He goes and talks to his dad. And then he goes and talks to the honor bearers. And I don't know. I quite enjoyed each of these young Zeth scenes. What, he's 14 now and he used to be 11 in our previous ones. So he even says it himself that I'm maturing a little bit. I can see some nuance and some worldviews. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. What do you guys think?
One of the things that was neat was we see the honor bear that comes in is the one that he just fought in the last episode that we talked about, the last set of chapters. And I wasn't expecting this. So okay, thinking back to that chapter, there's mentions that like you had this mentor honor bearer was like you had so much promise, like you were one of the best that was ever trained, or that type of thing. Here we're seeing like this is like the first honor bearer that Zeth comes into contact with, and he shows like I got a much clearer picture that man was quite a mentor to Zeth, and it kind of mentor in a Zeth capacity of like trained to fight under and things like that, you know. But has been around for a long time. I guess I was thinking of the guy before, like I said, there were allusions to this past, but I was thinking of it more of like a former coworker, less than now. Sure. It's like, okay, like you taught me a lot of what I know and things of that nature. So kind of added a lot there. So yeah, that's one thing that stood out to me, that and the aspect of Zeth asking questions, trying to figure out what is right, and maybe being led astray a little bit.
Yeah, with the mentor guy coming in, posing, I immediately can see the roots of some of the deep-seated problems that Zeth has. Because Zeth is still asking the same question that he's been asking this whole time. How do I know what is right? He's asking that to everyone. His parents, the farmer, the sergeant, the honor bearers. How do I know what is right? And here's his chance. He's got an honor bearer. He's skipping a few levels here. This is pretty far up the chain. And he seizes his moment. He blurts out the question, how do I know what's right? And they get into it with both Posen and one of the other honor bearers. And the answer they give him is very frustrating to me because it's so incredibly flawed. Yeah. The answer they give him is, well, it's very simple. Knowing what's right, doing what's right is simply doing as you are told by your superiors. Which I think immediately shows you where modern day Zeth is so stuck, because that's what Zeth has crafted his life to be. And that's what Kaladin is trying to like break him out of, is
his oath stone. Yeah.
Yeah. Obey, do the thing you're told to do. That is, Zeth has been so broken down to he's nothing but that. And Kaladin is trying to build him back up to, no, your decisions matter, because we're going to end up talking a little bit about Nail here in this conversation. Do what you're told by your superiors. is only good so far as your superiors are moral. If your superiors aren't moral, doing what they're telling you to do could very easily, very quickly be not the right thing to do. And to have someone in a position of authority, religious authority, governmental authority, civic authority, whatever this honor bearer person role, for that to be his answer is so problematic for me. Like, there's no more thought behind that. It's such an easily, you can pick that apart real fast. And that's like, well, obviously the answer is do what you're told. Oh, okay.
Well, but then he presses a little harder on Posen and he says, no, how do you know? Like, I'm not asking how do I know? I've already been told that by the farmer guy. How do you know what to do? And he says, well, I follow the chain of command just like you do. It goes up to the heralds and then all the way to the life brother. Life brother mentioned, woohoo! Which reminded me of that list, which we'll go back to in a second. But Zeth pushes him and says, no, how do you know what's right? And he goes, well, I listen to the chain of command too, just like you do. And yeah, I don't know. That I noticed, or I read this along with you and thought, that's so dismissive of Zeth's earnest question here. Zeth is just really asking, and he's asked what? His dad, the farmer, and now I actually wanted to like line up all their answers next to each other and figure out what exactly he's been told, but I didn't actually get the chance to do that. Do you guys remember what the farmer tells him to do? Or what is right? I don't remember. It's from several weeks ago now. I don't know. Maybe we can talk about it next week if I go and do some research. But young Zeth has such an earnest question here, and he's clearly excelling, except at this question of how do I know what's right? And I don't know. He's just so dismissed by Posen, and that's quite sad.
But you did mention life brother. And yes, that's a question. I can't remember when that first came up, but I want to say it was Way of Kings, that this was a name drop. Yeah.
It was definitely the Way of Kings. I'm wondering when it was in the Way of Kings, because it was in your long list of questions at the end of the Way of Kings. We have not had a single mention since.
It is continued to be in my list of unanswered questions. And here we go. Sort of the kind of answer to who is the life brother is the Spren of Soil.
Woo!
Mystery solved.
There you go.
Whatever the heck Spren of Soil means. Not the stone, I'll note. Apparently different from the stone. But Spren of Soil is the life brother. And that's apparently who Posen says he answers to, which is kind of also interesting. I wonder if that's going to become more important.
So it's okay to walk on the life brother, but not on not on the stones.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah, it's that easy, Trevor. Come on.
I'm trying to learn, okay? I'm asking what is right. How do you know what is right, Paul?
Well, I just do what the life brother tells me, so.
While you're walking on him or while you're walking on the stones?
I just do what he tells me, Trevor. It's not that hard. Just do the same. So. Okay.
How does he know what's right?
He does what his boss says. Yeah, it's just. Trust me. Yeah, trust me, bro.
And it gets even worse for Zeth, actually, by the end of the chapter, because I think it's the other honor bearer chimes in with, well, obviously you have a reason for asking this question. What are you wrestling with? And it kind of comes out that Zeth is unsure about violence and killing. Why? How do I know when it's right to kill and when it's not? And the conclusion they get to, and I think it's Posen maybe that jumps on this too, is, well, you're a soldier. How dare you question what it means to kill? Obviously, this soldier needs more experience with killing. Hey, General, please send him to the killing field so he can learn how to kill. Oh.
Hooray.
That's where the chapter ends.
Yeah. I think we're about to...
Zeth's flashbacks have been quite an emotional roller coaster. If we start with like a little bit of peace and fun, you know, we start with some minor squabbles of Zeth has the dilemma where the cook came and critiqued the food, even though he did it exactly to the measurements, you know, and conversations with the farmer. And then it gets quite a bit darker, right? And then we're dealing with the aftermath of that. There's some honorable stuff, such as Zeth's father going with him. Here we are, and I feel like we're about to take a sad turn. I feel like we're about to see Zeth. Zeth is not like naive, but y'all could feel differently, and that's fine. I feel like he still has an air of innocence to him in these flashbacks up to this point.
He's earnest.
Yes.
He's genuinely asking earnest questions.
He is. He's really wholeheartedly curious and trying to learn because he wants to do right. I fear as we go forward that we're going to see that light get covered up and dwindle. He obviously experienced a lot of serious trauma already, but I fear that the trauma did not necessarily get him fully down, but I'm afraid that where we're headed is going to show that descent, you know? And I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but that's what I'm guessing. And that's going to be tough if that's the case. That's probably going to be a bit heartbreaking.
It's really tough because Sanderson dangles the administrative position right in front of Zeth with his father. Like, oh, I can get you into the training ground for like the rest of your career. We can, you know, settle down and actually make a life here. And then, you know, literally 2 pages later, oh, off to battle with you. Oh, darn it.
Yeah, it's almost reminiscent of Kaladin and the surgeon life. That's a bit different because Kaladin kind of had dreams of being a soldier and went to protect his brother. It's a different story. But like you say, Brandon Sanderson kind of dangling the carrot or dangling something off to the side, being like, you had there was an opportunity arising for you to have a more peaceful life, and that hurts whenever you know what they go through. You know, like they know they go through so much, their life has changed. It hurts whenever you look at that alongside, like, I mean, what if he just had this peaceful option? You know, Spain, living in Spain, but without the S.
Elliot's not heard that one before, clearly.
Nope. Took me a second. Yeah. I got there.
All right. Anything else before we close this episode?
I enjoyed this Zeth flashback chapter 2 in that it's still taking us to the realm of deep thoughts. It's making us think. It's not just throwing some things into Zeth's backstory. It's really kind of asking some of the deeper questions, and Zeth is asking deep questions. The answers he's getting, I think, are pretty non-sufficient, but that makes you think. It makes you think as a reader, what would you answer if a 14-year-old kid asked you what was the right thing to do? And I like where this book is making us go mentally.
I definitely am echoing that, Elliot. I like how well Brendan Sanderson ties his flashbacks to the current day events. I've been dying to get Zeth flashbacks since the prologue. Like since we met Zeth. I'm like, I want to know more. I want to know, how did he get here? All the things, right? But truthfully, it was not time for that yet, because the things that we're learning and the things that are relevant are most relevant because of his modern day questioning, his sense of reason and a bit of a sense of self being reestablished goes so hand in hand with the ways we see him maybe being misled or trying to learn this as a kid. And I just love how that goes so hand in hand, where we just have these bookends that are both being built out at the same time. And it's, I feel like we're just going to build it out and kind of meet in the middle, have a lovely party afterwards, I guess. I don't know. I like how well it connects, is what I'm trying to say.
The party afterwards is Zeth's abusive send-off to go kill people. You do realize that's where this ends, right?
Okay, Trevor. That doesn't sound like a party to me. He does, however, Zeth does interrupt some parties throughout his coming. So
True.
Maybe that's the party.
Shout out to the King of Yaakoved.
Yeah. Tough.
All right. We can close it there for 245 next week. We are doing chapters 58, 59, and 60 for episode 246. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Let's do it.
Toodles.